Chase.
Good morning, Nancy Collins here on behalf of Paul Chase. If I could reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. The Department of Revenue does not have authority for open-ended access to demand by summons all of a business's records without judicial oversight. Financial records held by a bank contain vast amounts of sensitive information. Every check written and deposited, which is what the summons requested here, shows not only what business it does, but discrete information about affiliations, activity, travel, political support, religious support,
and
such.
Why would a corporation's checking account show that information?
As the United States Supreme Court recognized, it is human beings who own, run, and are employed by businesses, and that's why the Fourth Amendment, as well as Article 1, Section 7,
Amendment
protects.
Doesn't provide any protection for bank records, generally. There's a...
Under the third-party doctrine, correct. That is,
so
had been taken to be separate.
It's Article 1, Section 7.
Yes. Well, that is true, but in terms of the basic notion that there are privacy rights or interests constitutionally recognized, that certainly is true under the Fourth Amendment as well. Here, our Supreme Court...
For the corporation.
For the bank records.
Okay, but tell me why a corporation's checking account records would contain information about a person's political affiliations, travel plans, and that sort of things, assuming the person is respecting the separate legal identity of the corporation.
Corporations can certainly make political or other sorts of donations,
They disclose those, aren't they?
I would assume that they would be, as anyone would be.
There wouldn't be a privacy.
But in terms of the government's authority to access all that discrete information by obtaining every check written and deposited over a three-year span, which is requested here, that is certainly, by statute as well as Constitution, something that the Department of Revenue does not have open-ended access to obtain. By statute, that taxpayer information, including all that information, is recognized as confidential and privileged. And under the subpoena statute, RCW 8232.110, that the state relies on here, says they can request by summons that information, but if the person summoned refuses to comply, fails to obey, the recourse is judicial oversight. There's a contempt of court that can be found, and in the Department of Revenue versus March case demonstrates a judicial enforcement of that same summons.
Direct you to something else that I'm interested
yes.
in, and that's the standing question.
Yes.
If there are two shareholders, one's got 51% interest and one's got 49% interest, and they're unrelated, do they each have standing to assert the corporation's privacy interest in the records?
Well, I mean, in this case, you know, obviously we know that this was just Mr. Chase, but yes.
About the relationship between an individual and a corporation. So what's the answer to my question?
Well, I believe they do have standing here, and in this scenario, certainly. And in the trial court didn't really.
10 shareholders. Do they each have standing?
I don't know the answer to that question because I don't know enough about corporate law to understand all of that.
What's the line for when someone has standing to assert a corporation's interest in its privacy?
Certainly here, where Mr. Chase is the chairman, the president, the secretary, or the treasurer, it was a corporation form simply about his business. With no one, his wife joined it at some point, and no one else was apparently involved.
Whether this is a sole proprietorship or a corporation in terms of our analysis.
In this scenario, we have a corporation built solely upon a single person who is the head of the whole thing.
We generally treat that corporation as a separate person for liability questions, for taxation questions. Why would we treat it differently here than we do in those areas?
We have recognized that persons, the notion of persons protected includes businesses. We have recognized that in Reeder and in Miles, where those records were obtained.
Well, Miles doesn't talk at all about standing. Miles says they're deciding a very narrow question about an intensely regulated industry, and that's all that they're – the standing issue isn't even addressed there.
No, no.
It seems to be the only case you cite for the standing issue.
Well, Miles and Reeder are the two sort of recent cases that involve business-related banking records that were obtained. No, no, and the trial court standing analysis is really simply, well, there's no privacy interest, so therefore there can be no standing. It was sort of a circular notion.
If I'm at your house and the police come to search your house, it's not my house, I don't have any standing to complain about a violation of your Fourth Amendment Article 1, Section 7 rights.
Well, that's true, but on the flip side, if there is a privacy interest, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but if there is a privacy interest, there would be standing, and we have a broad standing doctrine in Washington that recognizes that.
Why isn't it the corporation's interest to assert?
If Mr. Chase here, who's been criminally charged, he's the one who's accused to have been in possession of.
If the corporation was charged, that'd be a different case.
It would be a different. It might well be a different case. The corporation is not charged. It's Mr. Chase who's being charged solely himself, and the sort of individual liability for paying taxes is also recognized in the statutes cited in the briefs. That the notion of personal liability was within there.
Well, we have that in the federal tax code too. If I'm the CEO and I don't pay the withholding from your paycheck to the government, I have personal liability.
Yes. Yes, which demonstrates that these...
But we don't have any privacy interests protected in the federal situation.
And that's solely because of that third-party doctrine, which is sort of being examined right now in the cell phone case of Carpenter.
We don't have
but
a third-party doctrine available to the state here.
Right, and there is none here because Washington has historically all protected financial records as among the core of what's deemed to be within the private affairs of the people that have been protected from the time of statehood. Persons has been defined to include businesses from the time of statehood, and that Article 1, Section 7 privacy right does extend to that.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Matt Thomas. I'm with the Attorney General's Office representing respondent, the State of Washington. A natural extension of the appellant's argument here would effectively eviscerate 82 years of statutory framework that allow the Department of Revenue to conduct audits of corporate bank records.
Why does that statutory framework trump a constitutional right?
In this case, it trumps the constitutional right. It doesn't necessarily trump the constitutional right. However, they do not have the same privacy interests that an individual does. In fact, five separate statutes specifically require corporations to maintain these types
of... Statutes define the scope of an Article 1, Section 7, right?
Under the Reeder analysis, Your Honor, we can look in terms of what notice the potentially protected party has about what privacy rights they may have. And if a corporation is under notice that there are statutes that require them to comply with certain things, specifically to enforce revenue.
Well,
then
if that argument were going to carry water, why would Mr. Miles have lost?
Well, Mr. Miles lost because in his
case... he won.
Well, Mr. Miles was... His privacy interests came into play.
I mean, he was in a regulated industry requiring all kinds of disclosure. All the statutes you've described were in effect, and the Supreme Court said he had a constitutional right to not only the records that were his personal records, but the entities he controlled.
In that case, it was because there was a showing that Mr. Miles had his privacy interest invaded. The subpoena in those issues were into his private banking records. And here we're only talking about the banking records of the corporation Red Leaf Construction.
Well, counsel tells us that because this is a single shareholder who also happens to be an officer and the president, and his spouse, I think, is the vice president or one of the other officers, that this really is their personal records.
It's not, Your Honor, because the establishment of a corporation creates an affirmative veil between the individual and the corporation. And in this case, Mr. Chase is charged individually for conduct he conducted while working for Red Leaf Construction, but Red Leaf Construction is a separate interest. We can't have a corporate veil that goes both ways.
If Red Leaf had been charged, would this search of records have been legitimately found illegal?
I do not believe that if Red Leaf itself had been charged, that it would change the analysis, because Red Leaf as a corporation maintains certain obligations to have these records specifically so the Department of Revenue can enforce the tax code.
Why is the subpoena used here a sufficient judicial oversight to satisfy the requirements of Reeder and Miles?
Well, Reeder and Miles, in order to get to the judicial oversight prong, we have to get over what the privacy interest prong is in Article 1, Section 7. And the state's position is that the privacy interests don't play a role here because of the requirements for them to meet their burden that privacy interests have been violated.
And how is the privacy interest different for a corporation than a sole proprietorship business?
A corporation, when somebody forms a corporation, they take an affirmative step to create that corporate veil. And this corporate veil, on one hand, they get certain protections. But they also create a separate entity. And while a corporation may have certain rights in certain circumstances, the corporation itself, those rights are different than the rights of the individual.
The U.S. Supreme Court doesn't seem to be following that path in recent decisions. They've recognized First Amendment rights for corporations that we didn't think they had.
Well, and if you look at both Citizens United and Hobby Lobby, Citizens United and Hobby Lobby both, as Your Honor pointed out, refer to First Amendment rights and not privacy rights. Second,
if you read Justice Douglas's opinions, that's one of the sources, and according to the lore, he only went with a number of to capture some votes. But started with the First Amendment as the source of privacy rights.
Certainly. However, when we're looking at the difference between the two, in Citizens United, for example, the court found Citizens United based largely upon several factors, one of which was the fact that it was involved in an upcoming election, and there was a concern about the ability for the corporation in Citizens United to be able to respond in time for the election. There was also a chilling effect that the court was concerned about both in Citizens United and in Hobby Lobby, and that chilling effect on the First Amendment is very different than the chilling effect here. In essence, if we start talking about privacy rights for records that should be audited by the State Department of Revenue, and this is the same audit process that it uses for corporations like Microsoft and Amazon.
It's also the same process they use for my sole proprietorship law firm, isn't it?
Certainly it is. But in a sole proprietorship law firm, there's going to be a different privacy interest because that's not a distinct legal entity. And here we need to respect the distinct legal entity of a corporation.
Case that recognizes the distinction you're asking us to make?
And not off the top of my head, no.
How about in any briefing that you've submitted?
Not that I recall, no. So in this case, when we start talking about what the Reeder analysis would say about the bank records that are at issue here, the bank records are really about, one, the appellant in this case would have to demonstrate they have a burden to carry. And their burden is not carried to say that they have a privacy interest merely by stating Miles, particularly when they cite one sentence out of Miles without the overall context. From my count, seven times throughout Miles it refers to personal or non-business records. And in fact, the following sentence after the conclusion that's cited by the appellant states that, the invasion of privacy is into personal bank records. And here we're talking about corporate bank records. And the statutory scheme that has been in place for 82 years is very clear that corporations maintain certain requirements for record keeping and for notice to the state. And
are those requirements for notice and record keeping different for corporations and unincorporated sole proprietorships?
Under the statute, 8232, they are. And the reason for that is to, again, maintain that difference between a corporation and a private citizen. So even if we were to say that the corporation maintains the same privacy rights, the burden is on the appellant to show that those privacy rights have been violated. And simply stating that Miles says that bank records may contain private information without meeting the rest of the burden, does not move us to the second prong of the Reader test. So
if Mr. Chase had come in and said, this shows that I have been subscribing to these newspapers and that I have traveled to these places and that I have attended these political rallies, would we have a different result?
Potentially we would, because that's on his burden to produce.
So he, in your mind, would have standing to assert this privacy interest as long as he showed that these records contain private information.
If he is asserting that standing not as he is charged now as an individual, but as a member of the corporation.
No, I'm talking about right now, if he was to come back to the trial court, let's say we agree with you, and he says, now here's all this additional information in these records that shows that I have some very private information that I wouldn't generally have to expose to the public. Do we have a situation where he might prevail and he has standing to make the argument?
If he is commingling his personal funds with corporate funds and risking breach of the private veil, then I would say we would potentially, yes, have a different analysis. But the only findings of fact that the trial court entered were that these were business records belonging to Red Leaf Construction. And because
if he came back in and said, I don't have a personal checking account, I run everything through the business account.
I think that, if he were to commingle his funds, then we would potentially have a different analysis. But here we're talking about a clear distinction between what is the corporate's bank account, corporation's bank account, and what is his private information that would be protected by Article 1, Section 7. So, in conclusion, in order to maintain the statutory scheme that's been ongoing for now for 82 years that allows the Department of Revenue to ensure tax compliance, a finding that the privacy that Miles covers privacy interests for corporations the same as it does with a private individual's personal records would substantially degrade the Department of Revenue's ability to conduct these audits. Thank you.
The statute that appears right after this summons statute, 8232117, the next one in the books, is a subpoena statute, which lets the Department of Revenue go to a judge and get a judicially authorized subpoena without notice to a business necessarily, not required, to obtain the records that they need to conduct the audits. The state's claim... It's not exactly a search warrant application.
It doesn't have probable cause element, but otherwise it's pretty similar.
It's I would think a lesser standard because they simply need to explain what they're wanting and say that's a reasonably related to an investigation we're doing. But it's a judicial oversight. To the way the statutory scheme is that if a person doesn't voluntarily comply, they may be held in contempt of court. A judge can enforce that summons, or the Department of Revenue can get a subpoena issued by a judge to obtain the information that they aren't able to obtain. It doesn't eviscerate their power to conduct their audits. They simply have to ensure that there's some sort of oversight when they're trying to access what the state acknowledges repeatedly throughout this tax code, that this is private, confidential, sensitive kind of information that the Department of Revenue isn't able to disclose widely. They're supposed to keep it. When they are able to access it, they have to do it with the understanding that it is private information. That's throughout all of these statutes. Because we have long recognized that this type of really discrete information, every check written and deposited over many years, is not the type of thing that the state can always rummage through. In that March case, Department of Revenue versus March, they claimed it was sort of a politically motivated investigation and whatnot. And this court said in that case, we have judicial oversight to ensure that they properly seek these tax-related or banking-related records. And that's simply what they needed to do here, that step, that either bring Mr. Chase in for a contempt of court proceeding or get a judge to sign a subpoena to obtain those records. And that's would be consistent.
Can you say anything about why they didn't do that?
No, they moved very quickly from, in this case, look at the timeline. They send letters out to Mr. Chase. They get them returned in the mail for wrong address. They immediately thereafter send a record to or request to a number of banks saying anything you have for this company, send it to us. And that's all that was done. And under the scenario, and of this particular case, in light of those facts, the state did overstep its constitutional and statutory authority. And for that reason, we ask you to reverse the trial court's ruling.